Good morning. Please be seated. In our next case, 2022-0750, AJZ's Hauling versus True North Warranty Programs of North America. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. McHale. Good morning.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy and Justices of the Court. My name is Mark McHale. On behalf of the appellant, True North Warranty Programs of North America, I will please reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. While the consequences and stakes here remain very high, the questions before this court remain straightforward. Can a trial court judge refuse to enforce res judicata where there exists a final appealable order in a prior proceeding between two commercial entities? The second question is, can a trial court judge sua sponte reconsider a final appealable order? The 8th District answered yes. However, this court's clear precedent in the past have been no. We are here today hoping to correct the 8th District's error.
So when you look at the statutory provision that requires a hearing, the language in the statute says court shall hear. And it looked to me like the 8th District kind of equivocated using that word. Can you talk about that?
Sure. That's the second proposition of law. I'm happy to start with that, Your Honor. The revised code 2711-03 is very clear that the court shall hear the parties. There's an inter and intra-district appellate conflict on that issue, which this court recognized 4 years ago in Schillenberg. At the time, this court did certify that question for review. The 8th District, depending on the specific panel, has held that unless requested, you're not entitled to a hearing on a revised code 2711-03. And in other instances, it's explicitly reversed when there wasn't a hearing held, and that would be, for example, DeFranco versus Light. And even prior to that, this court 20 years ago, in a 7-0 reversal, held in Maisel versus Best Buy that there's differing standards between revised code 2711-02, which is the motion to stay pending arbitration, versus 03, which has the hear, shall hear language. And so this court 20 years ago, Maisel versus Best Buy, acknowledged that there's a difference between the two, that 03 includes the magic language hearing, whereas if your motion is premised solely on 02, you're not entitled to a hearing.
Any reason for us to get to that issue?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Is there any reason we would get to that issue?
In this case or in general, Your Honor?
In this case.
Well, here we requested a hearing in bold, in caption, on the first
right,
page.
But if it's res judicata, we're done, right?
Correct.
We can't get to that issue.
Correct. If this court rules in favor of my client on res judicata, which is our position that the lawsuit one order, and I reference it in the briefing as lawsuit one order, August 6, 2019, that was a final order. It's undisputed that that's a final order. The 8th District acknowledged it was a final order, yet the 8th District permitted the trial court in the subsequent proceeding, where same claims, same parties, same issues, to reconsider its prior order from 2019.
During the first filing, after the ruling was made, did the plaintiff dismiss the case before the time to appeal took place?
So the lawsuit one order was handed down August 6, 2019. The case was dismissed voluntarily November 7, 2019, after the 30-day appellate period had run.
So they could have appealed that.
Correct. And this court has held, just as recently as State v. Harper 3 years ago, that if you don't exhaust your appellate rights, you don't get a do-over. And what happened here is a grave injustice, because as far as we were concerned, my client was concerned, in prevailing in that August 6, 2019 final order, that was the end of any Ohio State Court proceedings, and that the entirety of this dispute would be transferred to AAA in arbitration in North Carolina.
But do you, going to Justice DeWine's point, if you prevail on res judicata, wouldn't you also want us to clarify that question of a hearing?
I
or does it not matter?
Our position, thank you for that. Certainly, we believe that res judicata, if this court addresses that, then it's certainly this court's decision whether or not to address proposition of law number two. We, you know, as a matter of general practice, there's a significant conflict in Ohio appellate districts as to whether or not a hearing is required, whether you ask for it or not. But we believe this is not a close case on res judicata, that this court held in Pitts, a trial court lacks the ability to reconsider a final appealable order after the appellate period has run.
So, but what about the unjust outcome exception to the res judicata that the Court of Appeals obviously applied here?
Thank you for the question. So the Court of Appeals cites this court's dissent in Grava 30 years ago. That would be Justice Douglas's dissent, where in that moment in time, he dissented and he wrote that the res judicata ought not to apply as to be so rigid. That was not this court's majority holding 4-3.
So you're saying that there's no such thing as an unjust exception rule to res judicata?
I don't think there's any injustice in this case.
No. The question is, though, the unjust exception rule itself. Are you saying it just doesn't exist?
Well, I think this court's guidance as it relates to parties that have an opportunity to appeal, parties have an opportunity to file a Civil Rule 60B motion, that if they knowingly make a decision, like we have here, we know here in page 5 of the appellee's January 4th, 2023 brief, that instead of putting time and money into an appeal, its resources were focused on going after the primary culprit. So I don't think, Your Honor, in this case, there's any injustice between two commercial entities. And we know here that they're two commercial entities because when the lawsuit was refiled in December 16, 2019, there was a notification of commercial docket where the appellee represented to the court it was a commercial entity. And so there was a lot of ink spilled that Ms. LaBeyer, one of the owners of the appellee, doesn't know what arbitration is and otherwise is unfamiliar with the process. The reality is it's represented itself as a commercial entity, and this court has consistently held no exceptions to res judicata where there's two entities as opposed to those consumer-type cases.
But so you're not saying, though, that this court can't find that there could be an unjust exception to the application of res judicata?
I think this court is best positioned to the extent there's a global exception to res judicata that might be for the General Assembly. And this court 50 years ago in LaBarbera versus Batch explicitly held that the General Assembly could create an exception to res judicata, but I don't think any exception applies in this case, Your Honor.
Or any exception would apply that the court could find?
No.
Not this case, but you're saying in general. So you're saying for this unjust exception to exist, it has to be brought about by the General Assembly, not this court.
And that's just me quoting, Your Honor, this court in LaBarbera versus Batch, where it recognized that there was no exception. And in fact, this court favorably cites Federated Department Stores versus Mahdi, which is Justice Rehnquist at the United States Supreme Court. It cited that case 8 times, and that was an 8-1 decision where it upheld res judicata. And Justice Rehnquist specifically held that to otherwise carve a one-off exception would be an injustice. And so I would submit to you that if we want to ensure stability and certainty and predictability in our legal system, which Ohio benefits from being one of the top legal systems in the country, then in this specific case, there ought not be an exception, and the 8th District's finding was respectively erroneous.
Where's your authority for Ohio being one of the top in the country?
The ABA.
I'll check that out. Thank you.
I'll move. If there's no questions, I will briefly touch upon just a final conclusion and reserve the remaining time for rebuttal, that res judicata is not a novel concept. This court, in State v. Smith, in State v. Obermiller, has precluded criminal defendants from those on death row from relitigating issues, even in the face of alleged prosecutorial misconduct. And so what we're asking for today, this is a garden variety breach of contract case, that the lawsuit one order be respected, and that the entirety of the March 7, 2020 trial court order be reversed, and this case ordered to triple A arbitration. Thank you for your time, and I'll reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Friedberg.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy and your honors. Ron Friedberg for the appellee, AJ's Hauling, LLC. Res judicata is not a rigid, inflexible doctrine. This court didn't just say that in the dissent in Grava. It said it in Goodson, in Davis, in Piketon, in Simpkins, which, by the way, Simpkins was not overruled, as the appellant states, on the general principles of res judicata, that it's a doctrine that is to be applied in particular situations as fairness and justice require.
So what's the point of Rule 60B if someone can just file a new lawsuit after a final judgment?
Your Honor, I wasn't seeking to get a second bite at the apple here.
Well, how are you not seeking a second bite at the apple? You had a final judgment, you had a chance to appeal, and then you filed a new lawsuit. That seems like a second bite at the apple.
Right, but I filed, remember, none of the claims were adjudicated in that prior lawsuit. I filed the lawsuit. They moved to stay pending arbitration. I did not file a motion for reconsideration. I did not seek to collaterally attack that previous judgment.
How is filing a new lawsuit not collaterally attacking that previous judgment?
Because that judgment was only on the issue of the enforcement of the arbitration clause.
There's a judgment enforced, which just seems to be the issue. There's a judgment enforcing the arbitration clause. You filed a new lawsuit despite that judgment.
Right. And if the court would have granted in the second lawsuit the arbitration provision, we would have proceeded with arbitration.
How many times do you get to do that?
The claims have never been adjudicated. The only issue, Your Honor,
right? I know, but there was ordered to go to arbitration. You filed a new lawsuit. It'd be pretty cool if you could do that, right? If every time you got a judgment you didn't like, you could just file a new lawsuit and hope that the court saw it differently, or a different court saw it differently.
I filed the new lawsuit because the client made the determination to continue to proceed it, not to change that ruling. And only when they filed their same motion, I filed the same brief in opposition, and the trial judge, determined that it was unfair and unreasonable to apply res judicata. Because if you look at the two decisions—
Back to my first point, if this is the rule, if it's okay for someone, once they have a final judgment, to file a new lawsuit, Why would we even bother with 60B? Why even have a rule about reopening a judgment?
Your Honor, 60B would not even apply to vacate that procedural issue.
Sure, it would. Why wouldn't 60B apply? I mean, it wouldn't apply because there's no facts that would merit 60B. But generally, when you have a final judgment, the procedure is not to file a new lawsuit, but that you move under Rule 60B.
Well, Your Honor, in addition to the arbitration provision, there were other issues that the court could have decided. There's case law that supports, well, we're going to enforce arbitration, but we're not going to require it be in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, which the truck at issue has never been to and which my client has never conducted business in. So there were other issues for the court to decide. I was not trying to get a do-over here. I filed a lawsuit. They filed a motion without presenting any evidence, which they had every opportunity to do. And the court decided I didn't consider any of the evidence or address any of the arguments.
So why not file a notice of appeal?
Because, as I said, at the time, it was determined not to appeal that. We didn't have...
So you'd made a determination, if I understand the response to Justice DeWine, you made a determination not to appeal the final appealable order.
That's correct. And when we refiled the lawsuit, all that was a desire to pursue claims that were previously dismissed without prejudice. That happens all the time. There was nothing more than that. And when they filed the motion, I just filed the same brief in opposition with the same affidavit that I did in the other case. I was surprised that the judge changed her mind. But she had every right to do it because it was unfair.
So what good is a final judgment if you can just, if they're just kind of, you can go back to the judge after you get a final judgment and hope for a different result? What's a final judgment mean?
It's a final judgment in that first case, which she decided not to apply as res judicata because she didn't consider any of the evidence.
It's a final judgment in the first case, but it doesn't preclude another case with the same.
Under the doctrine of res judicata, it can and it often does, but the judge, the own trial judge, decided, given that the issue was unconscionability, which means shocks the senses, no reasonable person in its right mind would agree to this, the trial judge determined that it would be unfair and unreasonable to apply that first judgment in the second case. It was her determination. She was in the best decision to do it because she understood her reasoning or lack thereof in the first case. And in the second case, she did it. I've been practicing 32 years. I've never seen it before. I may not see it again.
That's not a great argument on appeal, right? I've never seen a judge do this.
What it means is that unreasonable and unjust exception should be determined on a case-by-case basis. This is a unique circumstance.
Counsel, that's what I was trying to get to. What is the criteria for unjust? What limits it so that it doesn't absorb all of res judicata? What's the criteria? What's the standard?
This court and courts of appeals have never articulated a standard other than unjust. It's unjust, which means not fair.
Unjust to whom?
Unjust to the party that's against whom res judicata would be applied.
Is that then, if that happens, isn't that unjust to the party wanting res judicata applied?
Not when the party could have presented evidence in counter to the undisputed evidence before this court. I'll get to that in a minute. Not when there's never been an adjudication of these claims anywhere. Not when the court has determined that having a case in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, where none of the witnesses are, the truck has never been, my client, who is a husband and wife small business, have ever been, it's not unfair to them. That was the whole point of this case, that arbitration provision is unfair.
Then why agree to it?
They didn't agree to it. As the undisputed evidence of the record shows, the warranty agreement was given to them 4 days after they took delivery of the truck. So they didn't agree to it. They had no opportunity to agree to it. That's the whole basis for the unconscionability finding. The trial court, again, who was in the best decision, determined would it be unfair and unjust to apply decision one in case two. The trial judge understood the reasoning or lack thereof, and she made that determination. The Court of Appeals, in a 75-paragraph opinion, which discusses all of the res judicata precedent, agreed. I don't see how this court or any other court could just substitute its decision of what's unjust and unfair and unreasonable, given that the trial judge in the first instance made that determination.
But that's in the third proposition of law, and that's not one that we accepted.
No, the point I'm making, Justice Brunner, is that
Brunner.
Bruner, I apologize, that the unfair and unjust exception is in the first proposition of law, and the Court of Appeals and the trial court determined that that exception applied in this case, a unique case with unique circumstances. And I, again, the trial court, who made decision one, was in the best decision to decide whether or not that exception applies. And this is not going to lead to a floodgate of litigation or endless litigation. It doesn't involve claim splitting. It doesn't involve relitigation of claims that were previously decided in a prior lawsuit.
I don't think that the Court of Appeals actually found, at least procedurally, that it was unconscionable. I don't think the Court of Appeals felt it had to get to it.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely did, because of the in the Court of Appeals case, that was an assignment of error.
Yeah,
this court didn't accept that assignment of error, but that was a big issue in the Court of Appeals.
Right, I see it now.
So, yes, res judicata is a fundamental principle of Ohio law, but it's not inflexible. And given that this issue was unconscionability, are we going to make this mom, husband and wife, small business travel to Mecklenburg County where nothing happened relative to this case, and that unconscionability is shocks the conscience, no reasonable person to agree to it? I believe, and the trial court believed, and the Court of Appeals believed, that that amounted to an unjust and unreasonable situation where the exception would apply.
But you knew that filed 60B, a 60B motion and claimed excusable neglect because you didn't file the appeal on a timely basis. I mean, could
I don't believe that that's excusable neglect if you make a conscious decision not to to file an appeal. Again, it was the trial court's decision not to apply res judicata. I wasn't seeking to end run the first decision because I decided, my client decided, that we are going to try this case in whatever forum is proper. And the trial court determined that it was proper in the Court of Common Pleas of Cuyahoga County because the first decision basically was a one-sentence half sheet.
But the first decision basically said you have to arbitrate it according to the contract.
That's right.
And you didn't appeal it.
That's right. But I didn't ask her to reconsider that decision. They filed a motion.
But you knew the facts that support your argument towards unconscionability in the first case, right?
I did. And we argued.
Why wouldn't you want to appeal that? I mean,
again, the decision was made at the time. This is a small company with limited resources. There was another defendant who was the prime target there, and the decision at the time was not to continue or stay those proceedings and have to go through an appeal. And after that, made the decision.
Mr. Friedberg,
that they
want. Is there anything over here? Is there anything in the law, any case, any statute that you are aware of that would have required you to maintain that case or lose it or forego it?
No. You mean the case against the
first,
North?
The first case. Was there anything that you said your clients made a decision to dismiss the case without prejudice or after the decision was made to send it to arbitration? But is there anything that should have or would have prevented you from to say to your clients, we can't dismiss this case, we have to continue through?
No, Your Honor, we settled with the main defendant and then decided to dismiss the two claims against True North without prejudice.
Okay.
There's nothing that said I had to do that or that I was prevented from doing
so
that.
When you refiled, it's a new case.
Right, within the statute of limitations.
It's
essentially akin to a 41A dismissal without prejudice. You have a right to refile.
So
and
then
that's what we did.
So they moved for arbitration. If the trial court had said, it happened to be the same judge, but even a different judge, yes, we're staying it for arbitration, you'd proceed or decide how you'd go there, either dismiss it again or either proceed with the litigation.
Right, and the argument, there is case law again that says you can enforce the arbitration provision but not require it to be in North Carolina. So, again, we're running into speculation here, but that, that is, it wouldn't have ended the dispute, it just would have meant we had to arbitrate the case somewhere.
Got it. Thank you.
Quickly on the hearing issue, I asked this court, first of all, I do think that the court should still pass on that issue, because the first decision that they're trying to say res judicata, there wasn't a hearing on that issue, on that motion either. So there does need to be some clarity on that.
Does hearing mean you have to come into court and argue it?
I submit no, and if you read the Blue Tech case, which was a recent case by the 8th District, and the Panzeca case in particular, they're cited in my brief, the Panzeca case compares the language of the court shall hear the parties, which numerous cases cited in my brief say that doesn't require an oral evidentiary hearing. Just requires the parties to be heard where there's evidence before the court, where the parties are fully briefed. And if you compare that to some other statutes where it does specifically say shall schedule a hearing, give notice of the hearing, given the court the opportunity to appear, there's a big contrast there. And the majority, and I believe the better decision, is that the 2711.03 does not require an oral or evidentiary hearing. If it did, it could have specifically said that, like the other statutes that the Panzeca case talks about.
So the word hear isn't good enough to mandate a hearing?
Well, a hearing, but there's non-oral hearings. There's hearings on the briefs. There's hearings on the
evidence. I don't think there's anything in the statute about non-oral hearings. That's just a practice that courts do sometimes in some places and sometimes not, right?
Right. I mean, summary judgment, for example. Some courts have hearings. Some courts decided
so
on the briefs.
So where's predictability in the statute?
Well,
the word is hear. Is that a hearing? I mean, wouldn't that be a hearing?
In other cases, and this is what the Panzeca say, the court says, shall schedule a hearing. This says the court shall hear the parties. And I don't know why, this really was a 2711.02, because they asked us to stay the proceedings pending arbitration. They weren't compelling us to go to arbitration. They weren't insisting on arbitration. They were saying, if you're going to pursue these claims, you can't do it here. You have to do it in arbitration. They weren't seeking to go forward with arbitration.
Well, no, that's because you were filing the claim, right?
Right, but that's why I'm saying, because I was filing the claim, they really were seeking to stay these proceedings. They weren't forcing us to go to the arbitration. They were saying, if you want to proceed, you can't do it here. We're going to stay these proceedings, and you have to go file. But they weren't forcing us to actually, in fact, file.
But if you wanted relief, you had to proceed, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
I thank you for my time. I see I've gone over, and I would ask that this court affirm the very comprehensive, well-reasoned decision of the 8th District Court of Appeals.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. McHale, you have 5 minutes, 22 seconds remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to briefly respond, I have five main points. Number one is our motion to stay and compel arbitration explicitly referenced revised code 2711.02 and 03, and the trial court's lawsuit one order specifically stated that this order that she's handing down is subject to a valid and enforceable arbitration agreement referencing 2711.02 and 03. So I just want to be clear for the record.
Why didn't that die when the case got dismissed?
Thank you for that question. So the 8th District did not address that, but this court has specifically held in Denham and the 10th District in Denlinger versus Columbus, and those are found in the May 3rd, 2022 10-page dissent of Judge O'Sullivan from the 8th District. The dismissal in November 2019, 4 months after the final appealable order, does not nullify a final order. So, and that's, again, this is a reference to Denlinger versus Columbus, and which relies on this court's 1999 decision in Denham. So a voluntary dismissal many months after the period to appeal pursuant to Appellate Rule 4 does not nullify a final.
Well, what about if the case were dismissed during the time to appeal? Because are you saying that someone who brings a case after a decision is made to send to arbitration cannot dismiss the case for any reason?
Well, I think in this situation here, I cannot speculate about other cases, Your Honor, but what I can say here is August 6, 2019, we have a final order respecting the enforceability of the of the subject arbitration clause. There was no dismissal within 30 days. The dismissal happened 4 months later, so.
But is that a distinction with a difference?
I think here that's, I don't think that's before the court here,
no, but
it, could it be if I'm on law review and answering that question, possibly, but for our purposes today, that wasn't something the 8th District discussed, that wasn't something in the briefing. It's certainly something this court could take on.
Theoretically, when we're discussing it. I understand what you're saying, that there might be some difference in, or a sense that, oh, you missed your time to appeal, so you dismissed the case. But so then the case is rebrought, and we start all over. You file your motion to send to arbitration. They oppose it. You probably expected the trial court to grant it, as the trial court did before, but the trial court does something different.
Sure. Without getting into the timing, I understand the appellate period is 30 days, which the appellee has acknowledged did not take advantage of. But here, I think that the greater issue is that there's no dispute res judicata applies. The 8th District carved an exception and allowed the trial court to reconsider its decision. And that is very problematic because this court in Pitts many decades ago said a trial court cannot reconsider its orders, not on motion, not on sua sponte. And as the appellee acknowledges in its briefing, it didn't file any procedural motion to vacate or to appeal or seek relief from that August 6, 2019 order. I'd like to conclude very briefly. In lawsuit 2, there was no new evidence. There was no new claims. There were no new law. There was no good cause or change in circumstances to allow one to wiggle out of res judicata. Today, it's a garden variety breach of contract case, which my client has been dealing with for 4 years. Tomorrow, it's a will contest case. The day after that, it's a civil rights case. The day after that, it's a personal injury case. This court has explicitly held, and again, I'm citing State v. Harper and its and State v. Strawley, where it recognizes federated department stores. Justice Rehnquist gave a great analysis where he specifically held, and the United States Supreme Court held, and this court in Grava adopted, when I quote, "The instability that would follow the establishment of a precedent for disregarding the doctrine of res judicata for, quote, equitable reasons would be greater than the benefit that might result from relieving some cases of individual hardship." And so I would ask this court to reverse the entirety of the 8th District, to be very clear that res judicata continues to mean something under the law.
Counsel, your colleague says the second set of in the lawsuit, the claims are different than in the first. And you just said the claims were the same.
And that's page 5 of the January 4, 2023 brief. The appellee indicates it chose not to seek any appellate remedy. But we know in page 5 of their brief, they admit, quote, "same claims were advanced in lawsuit 1 and 2. They are breach of contract and breach of implied duty and good faith. They are the exact same claims. The evidence, the appellee's counsel said it was the same summer of 19 affidavit that was resubmitted in 2020. We have the same set of facts, same set of law, and at the time, let me be very clear, the appellee's argument that the August 6, 2019 order was, at the moment in time, was not a final appealable order, which the appellee acknowledged at the 8th District they were mistaken, and it is a final appealable order.
Counsel, we really can't get to the unconscionability or the forum issues, can we, because we didn't accept your third proposition of law.
Correct. That's not before this court. That was a proposition of law that we raised 6 months ago, and this court opted to accept proposition.
So we really wouldn't, even though there were findings made, legal findings made by the 8th District on those issues, those are issues we wouldn't touch in the event that we reverse the 8th District Court of Appeals, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. And I put this in the briefing, and this court has also held that even if the first lawsuit order was wrong or incorrect, which we are not advancing, we believe it was 100% accurate, it's not for this court to decide whether or not it's unconscionable or not, just simply whether the doctrine of res judicata continues to mean something if we apply it in criminal cases. To death row inmates that are accusing the prosecutor of misconduct, this is a garden variety breach of contract. There should be no exceptions, and we respectfully ask that you reverse the entirety with an order that this case be sent to AAA in North Carolina. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll receive a decision by the court.